Okay, please have a seat, everyone. We will start the second day of our meeting. I hope you enjoyed the first one. So today we have, again, the same format as yesterday. So we're pairing and or tripling speakers together. Let me get my agenda. So the first session this morning will include two theory talks by Catherine Pépin and Andrei Chubukov. So let's begin with Catherine Pépin, who's at the CEA Saclay here in the Paris region, and she will tell us about SU2 theory, SU2 symmetry in underdog cuprates. Catherine.
So I'd like to thank the organizers for this very nice workshop and the opportunity to present the results here. Also, it's a work that has started in collaboration with Konstantin Yefetov, Andrik, and Matthias. And recently, it has been developed by these three guys, and two of them are in the room, Xavier and Thomas, who are in the EPHT, and Van Wildo, who is visiting from Brazil, from Goiânia. So this talk will be different from what you heard yesterday, in a sense that... In a sense that this is not a strong coupling approach, so it's more like what people call like intermediate coupling or like top-down theories. But my view is that they are still very necessary for understanding the physics of cuprates, and I will try to convince you of that in the minutes that during this talk. Okay, so that's called, perhaps it's called being brainwashed, but the discovery of the pseudo gap, which is the most mysterious phase of the cuprates, so it's attributed part to Warren and Alul, and this is an NMR paper of 89, I think, Henri, with your data here, showing this this dip here, attribute to electronic carriers. So this depletion of density in electronic carriers, which will be called the pseudo gap all through the years. So the pseudo gap is still one of the most mysterious phases of the cuprates. And as you heard a lot yesterday with all the talks, there's lots of development recently, especially with the observation of charge order, field-induced and not field-induced, in the phase diagrams of the cuprate. So this is again NMR, but a bit later, 2010, with those two points, which pinpoint the presence of some order in the charge sector in the phase diagram of those compounds. And so I'll go very quickly on the latest phase diagram that I got for this compound. So it's at temperature and doping. And this is a recent preprint by the group of Louis. And here you see the NMR observation under magnetic field, the Fermi surface reconstruction, and the X-rays. So they form a dome in the phase diagram of the cuprates. And this is well below the pseudo gap temperature T star. So yeah, so this is more review by a theoretician. Probably it all started, between those two. It started maybe with STM in 2002, with the first observation of charge order in those compounds. And then you had to wait until 2007, so that magnetic field, experiment under magnetic field, showed the reconstruction and they saw oscillation. And the link between the two, I think, was not very clear until some experiments showed that all these phenomena have a link together, and especially X-rays here with observation of commensurate charge order at 0.32, here pretty well defined peaks actually. So that's the X-ray measurement, so it's below this dome. So all seem to be peaked at around 0.12, doping of 0.12, which is still very a mystery for the community. So what I will present here is some ideas that have been around in the community, and you will probably hear more of that in the talk by Andre and Subir, that there is some underlying symmetries in the phase diagram of the cuprates, and one of them, SU2 rotation, has not been regarded for a very long time. So the idea is to take a D-wave superconductor and to rotate it to the charge sector. And if you do that, both are D-wave objects related by an operator which has an SU2 symmetry. So this idea is kind of very, I would say, fundamental in physics in general. And if you, even if you take an atom, if you have a degenerescence of level, it can be accidental or symmetry related. And what we want to promote here is that the symmetry is there around in the underdoped phase diagram of underdoped cuprates, and the charge sector and the superconducting sectors are very close in energy. And so if you increase the temperature, so there's a bit of splitting at zero temperature, and once you increase the temperature, you reach a regime where the electrons, I mean the excitations, can populate the two levels. So this is a pseudo spin, just to illustrate. So the symmetry is broken. It will be broken in a real compound, realistic compound, with, in some case, superconductivity at zero temperature, which is a lower state. But if the splitting is not too big, and by not too big I mean not much bigger than TC, then when you increase the temperature, you have a regime where you can actually explore, restore the symmetry, and explore the two levels. So with two levels, SU2 is the simplest operators that you can create, which can rotate between those two quantum levels. So that's basically the idea. And it's not new. People have tried to rotate the D-wave superconductor to some other sectors in the past. Maybe the most famous one is the SO5 symmetry, where you try to rotate the D-wave superconductivity to antiferromagnetic order. Here we are in a bit better shape, I would say, because in cuprates, antiferromagnetic order is more, there's a mode transition, so you have a local state for antiferromagnetism, while superconductivity is not localized by definition for the electrons. So when you want to rotate the superconductivity to the antiferromagnetic sector, you will have to pay the price that you undergo a metal insulator transition in the process. And there is a lot of energy to pay for that. So SU2 symmetry also is not at all a new idea. It has been in theories of RVB as long time as the paper by Gaby Cotlier, the D-wave has been rotated to the sector of flux phases in particular. If you look at the theory of Wen and Nagaoza. So, okay, I want to be a bit more precise, and it will be more to tell what exactly I mean by these two sectors. So that's supposedly the Fermi surface of the, one band, cuprate superconductors, with, like you recognize, the antiferromagnetic brilliant zone here with 8 points chaud, since we cannot say hotspots here. So if you take an electron somewhere, let's say it's a bit, it's here, and you want to pair it with a superconductor, you go from K to minus K, and you do superconducting pairing. Here what we have in mind is extremely simple in a sense. If you take a Fermi liquid, you have two kinds of logarithm or instability if you linearize Fermi surface. You have superconductive pairing, or you have Peierls modes. So I can go also from K minus 2 KF. And if a Fermi surface is linearized, you will get two logarithms. So in a sense, the non-analyticities or singularity of electrons, massless electrons, don't have so many logs. And those two sectors are the one we are talking about here. So one is a superconducting pairing, and one will be a Peierls mode, but of D-wave type, since they have to be equivalent. So if we look at the phase diagram of cuprates, we claim that below, especially for whole dopes, below the T-star line, In the whole phase region below the T-star line, the symmetry is present, meaning that the splitting is not big. And when we reach above temperatures above TC, it is restored. I would claim that it's the same here. And if the MFT people look at this little line here and antiferromagnetic mode, they will see that they are gapped. And the gap is probably due to some precursor of antiferromagnetism. So, okay, now we wanted to find some realization of that, and I think that's how it all started, that there is a realization of this symmetry, and to get it, in a sense, you have to simplify a lot the phase diagram of the cuprates and retain only the physics around a quantum critical point. So you neglect for a while the double occupation and a strong coupling. So this is a huge simplification, of course, of the phase diagram. And it's not very clear whether the symmetry will survive when you release the approximation you make this way. But it has an advantage, and this is due to the very seminal paper by the work of Subir, is that you can find a model, a field theoretical model, where the symmetry is realized. And this model is when you simplify again, because you simplify, you neglect the Coulomb interaction, you keep still something, so you keep proximity to a quantum critical point with very long range interaction, antiferromagnetic interaction. And you simplify again by keeping only 8 hotspots on the Fermi surface. So it's an 8 hotspot model, and you simplify again by linearizing it, the Fermi surface at the hotspots. So here it's represented. You see the the chi correspond to the conduction electron coupled to a bosonic mode hydrodynamic, which will, when the mass A goes to zero, will be critical around antiferromagnetic fluctuations, which means that in the 8 hotspot model, those points are becoming hot at the quantum critical point. So this theory, actually in a version which is not simplified, has been studied for a long time, and André has made very important contributions in them. And for a very long time, we used the Liljeberg theory, which consists to neglect vertices to describe this type of system. So it's more or less valid, actually, for this model, except that there is a few diagrams which were not resummed for those years, and which were explicitly found in this paper, where the symmetry is outlined. So it's where we got our contribution with Constantin. For this model especially, we found that you have a series of diagrams in a Cooper channel here, and in the particle-particle channel, and in a particle-hole channel, so Cooper and what I call piles, which will be divergent, and that you have to resum. So again, like to rephrase what I was telling at the beginning, you take an electron now at this hotspot, so you don't have the whole Fermi surface, you have only the 8 hotspot, and you will pair it with an electron in this hotspot. So now the two channels are, you see, completely degenerate, because since you are around in the very vicinity at the Fermi surface, in the limit where at t goes to zero, you are at the Fermi surface, and the 2kF is has the same logarithm as the Pyle channel, has the same logarithm as the Cooper channel, in the case where you linearize the Fermi surface. So that's basically the idea, and those two channels are completely equivalent in this theory, which is translated into the fact that you can the theory is invariant under the SU2 rotations. So the model we solved in the limit, which is not very physical, where the velocities at the hotspots are parallel, which is not really the physical limit, but we were happy to find a point where we could know what we were doing, because it was still some kind of a strong statement. So the idea now is that you have a precursor of antiferromagnetic quantum critical point, that, as you will see, is quite enormous, and is a composite order parameter made of a superconducting channel here and a Pyle's D-wave. Both are D-wave. So it's in a sense, you can consider it as a non-abelian superconductor. So it's a bit as if you were condensing a superconductor, but instead of having a U1 phase, you have this huge SU2 matrix which rotates between the two channels. So as you see, what we found is that the effect is not small. One is a scale of J, so we are at 0.6 at the maximum for this order parameter. And one advantage of this theory is the equations which we have to solve are pretty simple. You recognize here a gap, typical gap equation of the BCS type with two differences, like B is a modulus of a parameter which is now not simply a complex number, but has a matrix SU2 correlate. And the second difference is the propagator. The mediation here is due to the paramagnons close to the antiformatic QCP. So just to be clear, for people who would not have read a paper, or the lines here which mediate all those interactions are antiformatic paramagnons. So all these theories come from antiformatic fluctuations. So the main player is antiferromagnetism, but very close to the antiferromagnetic transition, you have two precursors, and which means that the antiferromagnetic quantum critical point is destabilized. And this is a big effect. It's very difficult to get rid of it. If you start from antiferromagnetic quantum critical point, you will see the precursor with the symmetry. So this is to illustrate the D-wave nature, and we will talk about it later, and especially in light of the work done with the STM people, that all that is a kind of bond order, and it will translate into some modulation of charge in the oxygen sites. Okay, so I want to emphasize that within the work done by Constantine, our idea was that this symmetry here is a good candidate for the pseudo gap. It's a very strong precursor of antiferromagnetic quantum critical point. And at least in electron dope, I think it should be seen or checked by some other techniques. But here I wanted to emphasize the recent experiments, especially it's not completely clear. I attributed the recent findings of Marc-Henri's group, and I linked them with an hematic line that we were discussing yesterday. I just wanted to point out that if you have a bond order with D-wave symmetry on the, then you will have a little bit of difference between the X and Y hoppings, and it will create for you an anisotropy in transport. So this model naturally will produce an anisotropy in transport almost by definition. As far as you defined it, nematicity, I mean, in transport, as the way you defined it, just by the difference between the X and Y hopping due to the presence of D-wave bond order. So that's another way to find an anisotropy in transport than the one described yesterday by André Marie, where he said it's due to scattering. But I think from what is seen in the experiments by Louis, it's not very clear yet whether it's due to scattering or whether it could be due to a different hopping on from side to side. Also, it has to be some phase which goes on the whole compound and not only on some domains. So there was a consistency check that we made only very recently, so this is not yet published, but on a good way to be. And since we have to present new results, I will present here first this consistency check. So when I was talking about this model, SU2 symmetry, I said, okay, it's verified at the hotspot for a very special case where you neglect the curvature, you neglect the other part of the Fermi surface, we neglect so many things. So we decide to neglect a bit less things and to include the realistic Fermi surfaces of the compounds. And this is done here. So we took all the possible Fermi surface, one band, and still we could find for YBCO, bismuth, HRG compound. And what we did is we just calculate the effective energy level of those two effective pseudo spins. So we calculate the gap associated to that if we take a superconductivity alone or if we take pi years alone. So we want to calculate how much of the splitting of the two levels, the curvature effects, basically the Fermiology, is doing to the model. So I was a bit worried when we did that, but it's, the result was not too bad. So you see, you have a huge region. So M is a mass when you go out from the quantum critical point. So at zero, you are at the quantum critical point. We took again the same spin fermion model. Now we just put the Fermiology and we solve for the two gap equations on the whole Fermi surface. So at the quantum critical point, you have infinite antiferromagnetic correlations, but there is a precursor. Here, we calculate both of them separately. You see they are very close to each other for most of the compounds. Now, when you reach the point where you start to lose, the mass is becoming too big, so the mass of the paramagnon is big, then you see that the Pyrrhus mode will suddenly collapse while the superconducting order parameter is slowly going to zero. So fine, so we said like if you are close and very strong antiferromagnetic correlations, it seems to be that the symmetry is pretty good on the whole of Fermi surface now. At least the splitting is not big at all. But what about if we are here? So then what we did is we took a mass which was in this region where the symmetry between the two is broken, but then we increased the coupling constant between antiferromagnetic modes and conduction electron. And we see that when the coupling constant is increased, the splitting seems to come back to very small value. So this is a study as a function of in kx and ky, so we want to verify. Here is with moderate mass. So you see, you can still see the quantum critical points, the point chaud here, there. For each compound we could find, so YBCO, bismuth, Ag, and neodymium. The splitting doesn't look so big, and you could, here we have put it. At the maximum, it's 0.2% on the whole Kx, Ky space. And then when we take a very big coupling constant and the mass of one, big mass but big coupling constant, we have this feature where the hotspots are completely blurred. And instead of hotspot, now we talk about hot regions, which is much more closer to the experimental situation, at least for the whole dope compounds. But then the splitting is very small. So of course, that's a nice thing of having a symmetry, is you can ask your theory friends, which work with other techniques, to check it. The first check came from Tulu Pargi and the group in Brazil. And you see here, it's a pretty nice. So they see the SU2 symmetry is basically the only fixed point defined at two loops within the eight hotspot model, but not close to antiferromagnetic QCP. They put also the Hubbard interactions. So it flows to a fixed point, which is SU2 symmetric. It's understandable because they do quasi 1D. So here you don't split the log by the mass in the Pyrrhus sector, but still it's very nice. And one thing I want to acknowledge, because you hear more, I'm sure, in a talk by André, is the supersymmetric partner of a D-wave superconductor is what I was called the Pyrrhus D-wave. But the supersymmetric, supersymmetric, I worked too much in supersymmetry in the past. The SU2 partner of the D-wave superconductor is a Pyrrhus D-wave. But if you take a charge order with wave vector parallel to the x-axis, this SU2 partner will be a p-density wave, which has been... I'm sure you hear more in the talk by André about that. So those two are related by the symmetry. So how close the charge sector is in general from the superconductivity? We have some recent results of the group in Switzerland showing that it's pretty close. So my view is a charge player is a really important... The charge sector is an important player in cuprate. It's not the main one, and certainly not as strong as antiferromagnetic fluctuations, but it probably can compete very effectively with superconductivity. So I think it should be taken extremely seriously, and it would be nice if within the DMFT technique, we could check whether, since this technique is really good to treat the proximity to mode transition, whether the splitting of this two SU2 channel is really big within this technique or not. So when you have a symmetry, try to look what your elders have done. And in SO5 theory, what they have done is they're looking for a collective mode. So those two levels are led by an effective collective mode. And what is nice with collective mode is experimentally, they will have to be seen somewhere because they are collective. So it will be like a very, very easy to see compared to the subtleties of charge order or something else. So we have to pass from a D-wave superconductor to a Pyrrhus mode. And so we have a charge 2 singlet around Q equal to Kf. And what we claim is that it's seen in at least in Raman scattering. It has a projection on the Q equals 0. And it's the famous A1G mode that they were seeing in the A1G channel for quite a long time, and which has received not a lot of attention so far. So it's the first theory to address it, I think. So this mode is seen only in the A1G channel, which means it is a very weird situation that you see A1G is that you don't have any symmetry. So it's a kind of isotropic around the Fermi surface. And in B1G and B2G, you don't see it at all. So we were able to reproduce this fact by using the screening we have to add for that. Okay, we start off a model with antiferromagnetic correlations, and we do RPA. And what is nice is we can decouple into the spin channel and into the channel corresponding to this mode. So there is a point in a phase diagram where this mode, this charge mode, is following what they observe in neutrons, which is also a feature at optimal doping, which has been acknowledged for a very long time. And that the neutron mode at 41 milliEV that the friends in LLB have looked in all details is exactly at the same energy as the A1G mode at optimal doping. Then they depart a little bit, but the two modes seems to be linked together. And this is a very nice feature that we find within this very simple RPA theory here. So our candidate for the mode is the mode which is SU2 related, which relate the D-wave superconductor to the pi-L channel. So I'm almost done, I will go very quickly there. So there is a controversy with a wave vector. So first of all, I want to advertise here that the wave vector of this Pyrrhus mode is on the diagonal only within the 8-hot spot model. But as soon as you think of a hot region instead of a hot spot, then it's not very clear. It's at 2 kF, so you have plenty. Well, I suppose that the hot region is equally hot. You will have plenty of equal wave vectors. It's more like a Brzozowski boson. So it's a 2 kF mode. It's probably at very low temperature, if you could condense it, it would choose a wave vector and condense in this wave vector. But in the pseudo-gap phase, where it's a bit excited, they are probably all populated. So to get the wave vector charge order with the wave vector parallel to the x-axis is not very simple. It has been addressed by many theories. And you'll hear about the one by André here. I want to advertise the one by Subir and Atkinson. And the main idea is that you need first to have a pseudo gap open to then stabilize the charge order with a vector parallel to x or y axis. And the stabilization is due to kind of, you need to have an interaction which is not, well, okay, which has some energy width, so which stabilizes at some higher energy, this wave vector. So in our case, we could stabilize it as well as a secondary instability by opening a little bit of anisotropy in the coupling constant between the x and y direction. But you have to do something to the simple 8-hot spot model, something in order to stabilize this channel. I never found it that it's a first instability compared to the Pyrrhus mode, at least within precursor of antiferromagnetism. So here are my conclusions. And okay, so that's my belief that charge orders are a key player in cuprate physics. And it would be nice to check whether this SU2 symmetry we talk about is present in an adopt region of phase diagram, especially with a theoretical technique, but also experiments. Okay. Okay, so I thank you for your attention and waiting for your
Thank you very much.